Hi and welcome to the Psychology Sisters podcast. I'm Amy, a registered psychotherapist.
And I'm Kat, a registered psychologist. As well as being best friends, we specialise in relationships, friendships, anxiety, mental health issues, confidence, work-life balance, setting and achieving goals, and overall guidance on how to slay life one day at a time.
In this podcast, we cut through all the vague well-being advice to offer you specific, scientific, and evidence-based information to help give you the skills and knowledge needed to master the art of life.
Now, let's dive deep into today's episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our first episode at the Psychology Sisters.
Yay!
Yay! So I'm Kat. I am 27 years old and I'm a registered psychologist in Australia.
And I'm Amy. I'm a registered psychotherapist. I'm 26 years old and I'm in Australia also.
That's good. So our topic today, what we're going to start off with is getting to know us a little bit, which is exciting. And then we're going to jump straight into social media and is social media making us sad and the effects on our mental health and mood. So we'll spend a little bit getting to know us and then we'll jump straight into our first topic for today. So I'm Kat, as I said before, and I have a wide variety of experience in the mental health field. I've worked mostly with clients who present with anxiety, depression, low self-confidence, low self-esteem, clients who struggle with relationships or assertive communication. But my main passion is women's mental health.
Awesome. And I'm Amy. I finished my degree last year and I'm a fully registered psychotherapist. Similar to Kat, I have experience in a wide range of mental health and my passion is relationships and the early stages of developmental attachment.
So the difference between a psychologist and a psychotherapist, I'm sure lots of people don't understand it. A psychologist assesses, diagnoses, and intervenes with individuals who suffer from psychological distress and mental illness.
And psychotherapy is really, really similar to a psychologist. The main differences are psychologists tend to work a lot more structured, so with a cognitive behavioral therapy model, and is more short-term intervention. And psychotherapy is more long-term, unstructured intervention with a focus on interpersonal relations. So how you perceive the world and how your early developmental ages affect your long-term relationships.
And I think that's really interesting because Ames and I have very different approaches to things. Some things we think exactly the same and sometimes we think very differently. And it's really cool to get her perspective on things. And I think that is shown through our work. We work together at the same place and sometimes I'll ask Ames for her perspective because she is so talented and passionate and knowledgeable about relationships and how that can impact our life, and sometimes she might hit me up for some advice. So I think it's really interesting that we both have that different side,
different frameworks
and sometimes that crosses over and sometimes it's completely different. So that's what we'll be bringing to our podcast, is you'll get a little bit of my opinion, a little bit of Amy's opinion. Sometimes they'll be different, sometimes they'll be the same, and we'll offer some different perspectives on issues.
Which is really important because each individual has different needs and one strategy might work really well for someone and the same strategy might not be beneficial for that a different person.
Absolutely. So a little bit about Amy and I. Amy and I are best friends. We call ourselves soul sisters because we truly believe that. I met Amy, how many years have we been best friends
for? Seven years ago?
Lucky number seven. So we met each other 7 years ago. Well, we've known each other for a while, but I think we became really, really close after I got back from a big trip from Europe. And since then we have been joined at the hip. We have everything in common. We've lived together. We've worked together. We've traveled together. So that's a little bit about Amy and I. So we just wanted to bring you a podcast. We are qualified professionals. We have the experience. We have evidence-based framework to help people, because the reason I wanted to start this podcast was because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I think I went on for help for me. I'm in the middle of planning a wedding and I felt so stressed. So I think I went into podcasting to help, just to have someone to listen to on the way to work. And I found that with podcasts is that it was quite vague. I found a lot of the holistic or well-being podcasts, they were really fantastic and engaging, but I found they didn't have any evidence behind them. There was no science behind. There was no theoretical framework to really understand why they were recommending certain tools and interventions. And I thought this is something that needs to be recognized in the podcast field, because lots of people are giving out lots of unsolicited advice without, I guess, evidence or qualifications. So we wanted to come in and kind of take over that a little bit while offering a very professional and scientific approach, but also keeping it fun. And we are soul sisters, so we can relate to a lot of things in the millennial age.
And similar to Kat, I started listening to podcasts when I went through a breakup. So I kind of just wanted to find something that I could relate to, that I could, you know, get a little bit of guidance. And similar when you're on your way to work and you might be looking for a little bit of motivation or just something to get your day started on a positive and motivating note, or just, you know, offer some extra helpful tips. Even though we are mental health professionals, it's nice just to get a fresh spin on things. But I found the same. Our holistic well-being podcast tended to be a little bit vague and lacked the theoretical science-based framework behind them. And when I listened to psychological podcasts that were from doctors and professionals, they kind of bored me.
They were quite boring, yes. Yeah,
tend to engage me, so
yeah.
Pecan and olidos, have both.
So yes, we are trying to bring you both because we want to keep it fun and relatable. We are girls in a millennial world trying to make sense of it, but we are also professionals who can help. So hopefully this is lots of fun. Also, we are on Instagram at The Psychology Sisters, so please feel free to follow us. And we hope that you guys enjoy the podcast. So thank you so much for listening this far. Now, we might jump...
Get straight into it.
So before we start, we might just have a disclosure for now and for the rest of the podcast. We'll also have it at the end. So this advice is not in replacement of psychological help of a psychologist or a registered psychotherapist. So if you feel that any part of this episode triggers you or you have any further concerns, please head to your GP or call Lifeline. Our first episode, Ames, do you want to introduce it?
Sure. So we are going to be talking about social media and what is social media doing to us? What effects is it having on us? Is it making us sad? And how can we use social media in a way that inspires us instead of making us feel inadequate?
Yes, I think this is such a hot topic.
It is. At the moment. Spicy.
It's so spicy. So saucy. So we know what social media is.
We use social media.
We use Instagram. I don't use Twitter. Do you use Twitter?
I don't have Twitter.
No, I don't use Twitter. So I'm sorry if anyone uses Twitter. We don't have much advice for Twitter. Instagram, Facebook,
Snapchat.
Yes. So I think that first off, we want to introduce social media as the definition. So it's anything that is online that you connect with other people. So it can be, it can even be email.
Mm.
It can be like, yeah, anything through email. So that's kind of the platform that we're looking at today. And we will explore a little bit about, first, we'll talk about the theoretical frameworks behind social media and the impact it can have on our mood. And Amy will talk a little bit about...
So I'm going to be exploring the contributing factors to mental health. I'm going to be exploring how social media can be linked to addiction and how our attachment style can be a prediction to social media addiction. I'm also going to be exploring some helpful ways in using social media responsibly. And a little analogy I've come up with in how we can monitor our own social media use and some biological responses we have when using social media.
I think the big thing that links social media and our mental health is self-confidence. I think that's a big one that we were just talking before about posting selfies, posting photos. And so we wanted to talk a bit about the effect of posting something on Facebook and how that affects us. So, and how do you know when you're posting something for a good reason or a bad reason? So I guess, what are some ideas that you think you have that you post a photo for a good reason? What do you reckon, Ames?
I think when you're, and when we mean good reason, it might be that it's not making you feel anxious. You don't feel nervous and you're not attributing your value to a post. So I think a good reason might be you really love a photo and you just want to share it with people. So yes. You might have a photo of, you know, you and your friend or your family and you think, oh gosh, that's
or
a great.
Or of your dog.
Or your dog. And you just think, oh great, like I love this photo. I'm going to put it up. And you're not thinking about how many likes it's going to get or, you know, who's going to see it or what's happening. It's just you love that photo.
Yes.
So you want to share it with.
You're not motivated by your external influences, like validation from other people. You're literally just wanting to get it out there and share it and think, this is a sick photo. This is amazing. Look at my sunset I took this morning.
Yes.
Look at my pug. Whereas maybe a negative reason, as you kind of touched on before, might be you're hoping to get the likes. You're hoping to beat someone else in the like game.
Or I'm feeling really down. I need validation. I need some external, you know, attributing factor to give me my sense of self-esteem or to validate my identity.
Yeah.
And that way you're, you know, that's when it kind of ties into social media having a currency. So it's like our likes and comments equal our value and we're letting others attribute value to us and decide who we are and what we're worth. And that's when it can become really detrimental to our mental health.
Yeah, so I think we'll talk a little bit about self-esteem and I, you know, the theories behind it. So self-esteem is defined as the confidence in one's own worth or abilities and the self-respect that you have for yourself. So I think it is a little bit different to self-confidence. I think self-confidence is more you look at what you've done previously and you gain confidence through experience and skills and work and relationships, whereas self-esteem is something that is, you know, your own assessment of your own self-worth rather than your own ability to do skills, whether it's work, going for a run, you know. So I think that self-esteem is something that is always changing. I certainly have very different self-esteem to what I did when I was, I guess, 15 or 16. And I feel like for me, it's been as I have gotten older that I have, my self-esteem has certainly improved, but it's not always perfect. I still have days where I feel really crappy and I don't feel like I like what I look in the mirror or on Instagram or anything like that. So it's not a perfect linear upward spiral into amazing self-esteem. It's always different, but I have found that's generally a pattern that as I've gotten older, it's increased. Is that kind of what you feel with yours?
Yeah, I think what you touched on is important to know that it's normal for human beings to fluctuate in self-esteem. It's normal as human beings to sometimes, you know, have insecurities. Everyone does, and that's just a normal part of life. I think self-esteem is how you view yourself, so how you feel in your own skin.
Yeah.
And I think the difference is, so self-esteem might be, I am worthy, I value myself, and self-confidence is, I feel like that changes a lot more. So some days your self-confidence is really high, you're really feeling yourself, you're vibing, you know, you might have like an awesome outfit and you know, your hair might be fresh and you're like, yeah, like I feel really confident. And or you could be in a social setting where it's like, oh, I don't know very many people, like I don't feel very confident here.
Yeah,
but you can still have high self-esteem and not be confident.
For sure. So just for some theory behind self-esteem, so for anyone who's new to the psychological world, theories are just that, theories. They're not facts, but they're just ways to try and to explain human behavior. So one theory is maybe something that everybody already knows, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You've probably heard this before. So down the bottom, it's your basic needs. So it's things like oxygen, food, water, shelter, sleep. And then it goes all the way up to self-actualization. And everybody that I talk to, they only know that about the hierarchy of needs is I want to reach self-actualization. To be totally honest, self-actualization is, I had to Google it and I feel like I should know what this is, but I realized what it was wisdom. Just the ability to be confident and to have morality and a lack of prejudice. So that doesn't sound like something you're born with. It sounds like something that you earn over time. So I feel like I know a lot of elderly people or wise people who've probably reached self-actualization. So the second, after oxygen and food at the bottom of the pyramid, we've got safety. So that's things like security of employment, security of your body, and security of your health. And then we've got the next thing up, which is friendship, family, and partners. That's love. And then the next one up is self-esteem. So as, I guess, you go up the levels of the pyramid, it starts off with your basic needs and goes up to more your emotional needs. Because say, for example, you're in the wild and you don't have food, you're not going to be looking for love or self-esteem. You're going to be looking for food and shelter. So that's our first step of what we need to survive. And so as we go up, the fourth, I guess, step on the ladder of the pyramid up is self-esteem. So, you know, this is something that Maslow feels like we need, is self-esteem. So why do you think we need self-esteem, Mimi? What do you think? Why is this helpful in life?
I feel like essentially self-esteem, it's important for all areas of life, but I think without self-esteem, for example, we stay in relationships that are toxic. We tolerate behavior that is abusive. Self-esteem is really the framework of how we perceive ourselves and what we accept. So someone with high self-esteem values their safety, values their self-worth. So for example, someone with high self-esteem wouldn't stay in a relationship that was abusive or toxic to them, because they know who they are as a person and they wouldn't tolerate that. Whereas someone with low self-esteem might depend on that relationship, whether it was toxic or not, to feed, to give themselves a sense of self, if that makes
sense. And also, you know, with things like domestic violence, which there is some abusive relationships, in my experience, I've seen people who do have high self-esteem go into those relationships, and obviously it is a bit of a cycle. And then at the end of it, they come out with lower self-esteem. So it's almost like those abusive relationships take away some of their sense of self and identity. And, you know, obviously with abusive relationships, whether it's with a partner or your parents, you know, these are all, and what we mean by abusive is emotional,
psychological,
physical. Yeah. And, you know, this can have a huge impact on your self-esteem. So we're not saying that if you've got low self-esteem, you're more likely to be in an abusive relationship. But what we're saying is that you might be more, it might take a little bit longer to leave or to realize that you're worth more, because if you don't have the internal belief that you are worth more than your weight in gold and everybody is so worthy of love, then it might take you a little bit longer to realize that. And sometimes it can take a lot to leave an abusive relationship. We got really deep here, didn't we? Ames really summed that up really well. So self-esteem is huge across everything. And also our career. Self-esteem is something that I know I've seen in my experiences that people with high self-esteem will generally work their way up the ladder quicker, because they're not afraid to ask for a raise. They're not afraid to ask for more from their employer. Whereas I'm not someone who, you know, has that confidence to be like, can I have a raise, or I deserve this. So I've seen other people when I used to work in corporate who would work their way up so quickly, and I'd be like, you know, I'm at the same level as you, but you're working your way up so much quicker. And that might be due to their really high self-confidence and self-esteem. So yeah, it really affects everything. And even like studying, Amy and I have both spent a lot of time at uni, way too long. Our hex debt is huge. But I think, you know, as you go through uni, I started off uni really scared and a little bit shy. And I think uni really makes you develop self-esteem and self-reliance, and you have an identity. I felt at uni I had a little bit of identity, like I'm a uni student, you know, so that helps as well. And getting good feedback is really, really helpful for self-esteem. So another theory I had to kind of help to explain self-esteem is social learning theories. And it really just deems that self-esteem functions to check your social status and acceptance among others. So it's more of just like a status marker. Or if you've got high self-esteem, you're more likely, this is a theory, you're more likely to be in a higher social status group. And often, and this theory also posits that your self-esteem depends on your social status. So it's a bit of a catch-22. And so if you are rejected from a social group or your friends or your community, however, your self-esteem will eventually decrease and vice versa.
And that's really interesting. And I think that's kind of what I was trying to say, poorly put, is relationships, not just romantic, parental, friendships, any kind of relationship. I think self-esteem really does affect your tolerance and what you're worth and how much you value yourself, because it's the belief that I am worthy, therefore I'll go after what I think I deserve because I believe in myself, because I feel that that's what I deserve and I wouldn't accept less. So I think that theory kind of says what I was trying to say a lot more articulately.
With a lot of the things that we experience in life, when we read out a theory, it's like, oh yeah, like that makes perfect sense. That can explain.
My brain was trying to go there, but that person's brain did it so much better.
Thank you, Mark. So I wanted to talk to you guys about a study. There's lots of study. I guess social media is a new area for psychological research to study, because it is only really new. And well, it's not new, it's been around for a while, but I think the effects that it has on our mental health, this is a new topic that's coming up. So I wanted to talk to you guys about a really interesting study that's happened in Canada. In 2018, a study was conducted where groups of people were put in three different groups. So one group was asked to read a newspaper, one group was asked to take a selfie and post it online, and one group was asked to take a selfie, Photoshop the selfie, and then put it online, so post it online. So they hypothesized that the group who put up the selfie, or the, you know, the Photoshop selfie, would feel more confident after they put up their selfie than the group who were just reading a newspaper article. So what they actually found, though, was the group who put up a selfie online, they actually, after they put it up, felt more anxious, less confident, and less attractive than those who were reading a newspaper article. And the Photoshop selfie group felt even more anxious and more unattractive than the other two groups. I think when I first read that, I had the same hypothesis in my head. I said, well, of course, if you post a selfie, you're going to want to get your best angles and you're going to want to feel good. And after you post it, you might think, yeah, damn, I'm feeling myself today. Like, I've got that instant gratification. But what they found was that actually after you post it, you're more anxious and you're more likely to feel less confident and less attractive than if you're just doing something neutral like watching TV or reading a newspaper. Mm. And so I wanted to talk to you guys about that today because, you know, maybe get Amy's opinion on why. Why is it that after we post something, we feel more anxious or less attractive? What do you reckon, Amy? What's your thoughts on this?
No, I think it's really interesting. And I guess my initial thoughts are, well, it makes sense if we break it down and analyze it, because we are placing our value with our values of ourselves with an external, you know, source. So we're attaching our value to something.
You're attaching yourself to something that is out of your control. It is contingent on other people.
Yeah, that's right. And I think when I think of myself, when I'm not having a confident day or when my self-esteem is lower, that negative internal monologue that kind of, am I pretty enough? Oh, I didn't get as many likes as I thought I would on this photo. Is it not a good photo? Or that person's likes got more. Oh, quick, check my phone. How's that photo going for likes?
Yes.
Oh, it's been 2 hours and I only got 30 likes. Oh, yeah. It mustn't be a good photo. Should I delete it?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't delete it now. It's been up there for two hours. Everyone's already seen it.
And so you're giving so much power to people you probably have never even met before. You're giving so much power for them to dictate your own self-worth, your own self-confidence. That is so much power to give someone else who most, 9 times out of 10, I know a lot of people on my Instagram I've never met before. And it's almost like, I'm allowing that to happen. I'm allowing, when I do the same thing, I allow people to dictate how I feel. And really, at the end of the day, it's up to me to dictate how I choose to feel. Happiness is available to anyone at any moment. I think it's just getting into your brain and realizing that, well, like, stop yourself, really catch yourself and say, you know, I find with myself, if something happens similar, I'll post a photo and I'll think, oh my God, it didn't get the likes that I thought it would. I thought this was a sick photo, but maybe not many other people did. And sometimes you have the opposite aims where you'll post a photo and think, oh yeah, it's a bit of an average photo, and you'll get like a lot of likes. And so I have to catch myself in the times when I feel really low and say, like, this is ridiculous. Your self-worth is not based on anybody else but yourself. Mm. And I think that a lot of girls and guys too might need a bit of self-love and catching yourself out as well.
Yeah. And I think why it can be so difficult to catch yourself when you're experiencing these anxious reactions to, you know, when you post a photo, like, oh, is it going to do well? Is it not going to do well? Or it hasn't done well? Or, oh, it's like, surprise, it did better than you thought. It's because we're obsessed. Yeah. We are addicted to social media use, and it's only expanding. You know, studies have shown that we elicit a biological response similar to that of drug and alcohol addiction. When we receive a like, we get a hit of dopamine, that feel good neurotransmitter, and it's a chemical that our brain elicits, and it's addictive. That feeling is really addictive.
Yeah. It's the instant validation, the instant gratification. It's that feeling of like, oh wow, like it would, I can't believe that it's the same as when you take a hit of something.
Yeah.
Drugs.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's really important to touch on as well. And I think that's why, like that study mentioned, reading a paper, doing something neutral, you are going to feel better because you're not having that up and down, like, oh, I got a like, there's my hit of dopamine. Yes. Like, oh, I didn't get a like, you know, so there's that real like high, low, anxious, that real ambivalent, like every time you check your phone, like, has it done well? Has it not done well? That does put you in a really
vulnerable.
Yeah, definitely. Whereas, you know, if you're reading a paper,
you're... No one's judging you on how you read a paper.
Yeah, exactly right.
So I think that even offering a photoshopped, I mean, that is the one that got me. I was like, so even if you photoshopped yourself and made yourself look on point with your body and your face, they're actually the group that felt the least attractive and the least confident and the most anxious.
Have you ever uploaded a photo and then gone somewhere and thought, I don't look as good out as I do in my photo?
Yes. And I know that sometimes when I meet up with people that I haven't seen in ages, or I meet a new person who I've met off Instagram, I'm always worried they're going to think,
oh, I look better on Instagram.
You don't look that good. Mm. Or you're not as pretty as you upload, or you're not as cool or funny.
And I think that makes me more socially anxious.
Yes, yes. Mm. So I think that you're onto something there. That last group who photoshopped themselves and put up this perfect image. Of course, when you go meet up with, you know, someone who you haven't met before, who's seen your social media, you might have this feeling of almost imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Where you feel...
It's not an accurate representation.
No. And and you might think, oh my God, they don't actually think that I'm that good looking. And that's going to make you really anxious when you see them. Even though people probably would not even realize, it's only your own freakouts that you have. So that's really interesting. And I think that it just goes to show that we are so... you know, so dependent on this little thing, which is actually a huge thing, but, you know, it is something that makes us...
Our own little micro scale has a macro effect.
Exactly, exactly. And if you feel anxious, I mean, anyone who knows about anxiety affects every part of your life, your sleep, your relationships, your work, your friends, your family,
your own sense of self.
Anything, getting out of bed. So if you feel more anxious from social media, it's going to have a whole ripple effect on your whole life. So that's really, you know, something you really need to really catch yourself. You know, if you do notice yourself doing these things, please catch yourself and say, I don't know, what do you usually say to yourself if you catch yourself?
So as I mentioned, I kind of had this thought, and it's like a little analogy. I So I'm someone that likes to live a very healthy, balanced lifestyle. Mm. So I make sure that 80% of the time I'm eating healthy, nutritious foods, yeah, because I know that holistically it makes me feel good about myself. It allows my body to have energy to do things. It makes me, you know, it makes my brain clear. And, you know, I really like exercise just for overall health and well-being.
Yeah.
And then I thought social media feed, Instagram feed.
Mm.
What am I feeding myself?
Ah, that's really clever.
Yeah. What does my social diet say about me, or what is my social media consumption doing to me?
Yes. Yeah.
So when I'm scrolling through social media and I'm being human and comparing myself to someone else's life, like, oh, they're always going on a really cool holiday, like I should go on a holiday, or, oh my God, I'm so fat compared to that person.
Yeah.
Oh, they've got an amazing body. Yeah. Or, wow, that lady is so beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't look like that. I'm feeding myself unhealthy information.
Junk.
Yeah.
Junk food.
Yeah. I'm clogging up my social media diet with things that don't serve me, that don't benefit me, that, you know, generate negative thoughts. And, you know, you can do things like clean up your social media feed.
Detox.
If you follow fitness accounts, beauty accounts, anything like that that make you feel bad about yourself, don't follow them.
And also, I used to follow a lot of fitness accounts, and it was always these female bodybuilders, and I'd think, oh my God, you guys are amazing. They have their six packs, they have their big booties. But that is quite unrealistic. They have worked their butt off to get there. So I can imagine that I have that inside as, you know, I'm a little bit older now. But as a young girl, well, as like a teenager, that's young to me. That, for me, I was thinking, all right, well, you know, if they can do it, then so can I. Like, obviously, you know, this is what the expectation is. This is what girls have to look like. And they're getting lots of likes. So that must be the right thing to do, is to look like that. So now I need to go and work my butt off at the gym and try and look like that, because then that'll mean that I'm doing the right thing, or I'm looking like I should. When really, it's so hard to reach a body like they have, you know, with their, and a lot of them are probably on something, you know, some performance enhancers. So I think a lot of people just see the 1% of the population that do work their butt off, which is fantastic. And if you can do that, then good on you. But that's not the normal everyday life. And they probably don't look like that all the time. That's probably in their peak season, you know, WBFF, is that right? Look at me, you wanna be. So yeah, that's something that is, you know, can be part of your social media junk food, something that you do need to have a little bit of a cleanse with, because it's really important to follow people that inspire you. And I think a good way to do it, and please tell me if I'm wrong, but I just had an idea, look at a photo. How does it make you feel? If that person's account or their photos make you feel good, or it makes you laugh, or you are inspired, then I think that's a great reason to keep them on your feed. But if you look at someone's account and that makes you feel like crap, that is not they should be a detox. That is off your list.
Inspired, not inadequate.
Yes, yes. So even there are models and influencers who I follow, because I was thinking, oh, they got really cool clothes, or they got really cool places, or they're so pretty. But even if they're not meaning to, they still make me feel really crap. And that can set up my whole day. If I'm scrolling in the morning and I see someone who is wearing amazing clothes at a cool event, looking amazing, my whole day is going to be like, oh, why don't I have that? Like, I've got to go to work. Why can't I be in Paris or at a really cool event? So that can impact my whole day, which is absolutely silly, but it's something that happens subconsciously until I catch myself out and really understand what I'm thinking. It's like, no, Kat, this is really silly. Like, you have got the whole day. Most people don't have, you know, an amazing job like you do. So a lot of it is catching yourself and practicing gratitude, I find, is helpful for me. Yeah.
So that might be part of responsible social media consumption as well, is when are you consuming your social feed?
Yes.
So if you know that you're someone whose day can be impacted by you know, what you see and how it resonates with you, don't check your social media first thing when you wake up in the morning.
Mm.
You know, do things that make you feel good and consume social media when, you know, after you've already set yourself up for the day.
Yeah.
Like when it's not going to impact you negatively,
yeah,
if it does.
Yeah.
And I know that's a habit that I've had to personally break is first thing I used to do when I woke up was scroll through social media in bed, and it may not have even had a negative impact. It may have just been that I wasted 15 minutes scrolling aimlessly through social media.
Yes.
And so I start the day slow.
Yes.
Rather than waking up, jumping out of bed, going for a walk, having a big drink of water, and getting really into the swing of the day and feeling bright and fresh and light on my toes.
I think that's so true. And just like junk food makes you sad, junk social media makes you sad too. And junk food makes you feel it's great at the time and you get that hit of sugar. I know we love chocolate.
We love chocolate
and
so
cookies.
Much.
When we eat cookies, we're like, yes, this is the best thing ever. We're like little kids. Yum. And then 5 minutes after, we have this down of like, oh.
I feel sluggish.
I feel sluggish. I feel crappy. Pimples will come the next day. Like you just have that all over feeling of blur. And I think that's the same with when you follow people on social media who at the time you think, oh, they're so great and I can't wait to follow them. They've got the best clothes or that's how I want to look like. And it's that little hit of, yes, if I follow them, then that means I'm probably going to look like them. Or if I follow them, I'm going to be really inspired. Or if I follow them, my life's going to be better. But it's that, you know, the long-term feeling of blur. It's like, oh, actually, they don't make me feel better. They're like the sugar rush that I don't need. So that's really important, you know, to have a bit of a social media detox and really look at every single account you follow, because even if you don't realize it subconsciously, your brain is processing every single image you see and you're having thoughts. And we have, I think it's like 50,000 thoughts a day. And I reckon I only notice about maybe 100 thoughts a day. So imagine how many subconscious thoughts are happening in my head without me even realizing, without anybody even realizing. So,
and a study came out and we check our phones on average 150 times a day.
Wow.
Yeah. On average?
There, that is a lot of times. So I also read this crazy stat that 16 to 25 year olds spend 5 hours per week taking and uploading selfies. So that's not just time on social media scrolling. That's literally taking photos and uploading a selfie.
Mm.
So that must take a lot of time.
Waiting for the peak time, getting the perfect caption.
Yes.
Getting the lighting right.
Yes. And that is a lot of time. And I am all for using social media for, you know, relaxing. I find sometimes people might say, get off social media, get off your phone. It's really bad for you. But I think if you've worked a long day, you've gone for a really nice walk, or you've done all that you need to do, done all the cleaning and the errands, social media is a good way to unwind and to do nothing. I think in our life, we need to do a lot more of doing just nothing and sitting, you know, around. I know people who are busy who would really benefit from just doing nothing. But so I'm all for a bit of social media for a bit of relaxation, but I think there needs to be a bit of a time limit or just even awareness of how much time you're spending.
I think awareness is the important factor.
Yeah, and I think iPhones, I don't know with any other phones, but they have that screen time, which is, I remember when I first turned it on, I thought, oh, I don't want to know this, but I need to rip it off like a Band-Aid, because I was like, ignorance is bliss.
Mm.
So once I know, at least I can catch myself every time I'm on it. And even sometimes when I'm talking to Josh, my partner, I'll be on my phone and he'll be telling me something important. And it's quite disrespectful, I've noticed, when I'm on it. And he doesn't say anything, but for me, or when, you know, talking to other people, I'm on my phone scrolling. Like, I know that's really bad, but it's something that I have had to catch myself on a lot, and I really just be present with another person, because as soon as you start to do that, it can certainly start to impact friendships. Like, I think if I was talking to someone else, they were scrolling on their phone, I'd think, I feel less important. I don't feel like they're listening to me. Do you ever feel like that sometimes?
Yeah, definitely. And I've had it both ways. So like, I've been on my phone, I've been scrolling, and I can feel the person kind of looking at me like, oh, you're not really listening to me. You're not really paying attention to me. And I've also been on the receiving end where someone's been on their phone and I'm talking to them thinking they're not hearing a word I'm saying.
Yes,
because
yes.
We know that you can't actively listen to someone and scroll on your
phone. Exactly. And that's kind of the, but that's the way it is now. Like, that's actually quite normal, yeah. Which is kind of sad.
Like when you see couples at cafes.
Oh my God, they're all on their phone.
All on their phone.
Yes. And I certainly do that too. But it's just catching yourself. And we're not saying you need to change every single social media behavior you have, but we just strongly recommend in any psychological intervention, it's always to be mindful of what you're doing. We don't instantly think you need to change this and change this because it's, you know, it's not, we're not going cold turkey, but I think we would recommend for a client,
just be aware,
be more mindful of the way that you use social media and more mindful of how many times you're on it. And, you know, it has its good, it has its great points. Like social media is fantastic. I use social media for all my travel. When I'm planning my next travel destination, I am a serial traveler. I need help. I need to go to rehab for it. But I use Instagram a lot to use that. And that's my inspiration. And, you know, planning a wedding, I'm using Instagram a lot. But I do know there's lots of bad stuff, negative things on Instagram or Facebook that don't make me feel so good. So
I think it's just like anything, being aware of what you put into your body, being aware of how social media impacts you individually. So if you notice that you place a lot of your self-worth and self-value into the likes you get back, just ask yourself, what's going on for me? Like, why am I feeling so affected by the amount of likes or attention a post gets? And just kind of exploring yourself a little bit, like, if I was asked to delete social media or if I was a week's break of social media, how would I feel? And what? Why wouldn't I feel comfortable doing that? Is it because you would think you're missing out? So fear of missing out, FOMO is another huge thing.
Yes.
It's actually a psychological.
It is. Isn't that scary?
Yeah. And then, yeah, just really being aware of how social media affects you as an individual, I think super important.
And why are you posting a selfie? Why is it so important you need to get this image out? If you feel like you look banging and you're confident and you want to show people, yes, I have, you know, got new hair and I'm so keen to show it with everyone and I feel and I'm feeling myself, then 100% go for it. You know, I am such a strong believer in selfies and feeling yourself. I think self-confidence is, you know, so important and self-esteem is so important. So if you feel confident and it makes you feel confident posting it, and after you post it, you feel really good and you're not worrying about the amount of likes you get, kind of what we're talking about before, do it, go for it 100%. But if you are doing it, why, if you're posting it because you're hoping to get that crush, do people still say crush? I feel so old. That person that you're into, hoping you get a like from them, hoping that they see it, hoping that your ex-boyfriend or girlfriend sees it and is jealous, hoping that your friends see it and get jealous, hoping for something that is dependent on other people, then you're probably doing it for the wrong reason. And I can guarantee if you're doing it for the wrong reason, you're not going to feel good after you post it. Every single time, you're going to feel really, really crappy. So really be mindful of why you're posting it. And you can probably say, you know, if you are starting to be mindful of your posting, go back to the last selfie you posted and remember how that made you feel after it, if you didn't get the likes that you wanted, or how anxious you felt posting that and how you felt after it. And probably how you felt with that one is how you're going to feel with the current one that you want to post. Just as anxious, just as worried about what other people think of you. So that would be my advice for people who are posting selfies for validation, because you absolutely cannot get validation from anybody else except from yourself. And the sooner you learn that, the sooner that it's a lot easier to feel confident and to have that self-esteem. So there's one more study we want to talk about that's happening in Canada at the moment, and it's all the rage. So what's happening is that they're trialing in Canada taking away likes on Instagram. And I wanted to get Amy's opinion of what she thought the impact this might have. So people who post photos, they can still see who likes their photos, but other people who look at their photos can't see how many likes they get. They can just see who has liked it of their friends, but they can't see the number. So what I understand is they can still see the comments and they can still see the followers, but they cannot see the number of likes. So what do you think about this, Amy, about this study?
I've got so many thoughts about this study. try and condense it. So I think this is really important to explore because social media is only becoming more prevalent in today's society.
Yes.
And like I was saying before, we really need to be mindful and aware of our social media consumption because of factors like comparison and social currency and our sense of self and how social media is quantifying our self-worth. And addiction and obsession with social media are very real psychological effects that do affect our mental health. So I think there are pros and cons. I think one of the positives in removing other people's seen likes is that our self-worth is less quantifiable, as less
measured by other people.
Yeah, that's right.
Less measurable.
It's no longer
about numbers.
Yeah, and no longer about attributing your self-worth and your value to how many likes you get on social media because they're no longer present. I think one factor is that if you use social media as a marketing
online
tool
business.
Online business, I guess it also does have, you know, a way of, in the same way that it can get value from likes and comments in a mental aspect, there is actually value in likes and comments in a business sense.
Of course, they depend on likes.
That's right, yeah.
For it to earn an income. And I wonder, I had this thought that maybe instead of liking, people are going to start commenting more as a way to show
their support
or their status.
Yeah.
So I wonder if comments will go up instead of likes. I wonder if that's something that might happen. So I kind of had mixed thoughts about this too. I thought it's fantastic because people don't have the comparison with each other's photos now. They think, oh, okay, I don't have to. That person got so many likes. I want to get that many likes. That's gone. But what I still think might be a bit of a problem is that people still get the validation. People who post their own photos can still see who likes it, and they're still getting that hit of dopamine and the validation from other people. And so I still think that is an issue. I thought this is a wild, but take likes out altogether and see what happens. So we will be watching this study with keen eyes and seeing what happens. They're doing this for the right reason, though. They're doing it to
it's encouraging, I think, responsible, safe
use.
Social media use.
Yes. Yeah. And Josh told me a crazy stat the other day. Do you know that TV series about the girl? What was that called? 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah.
So after 13 Reasons Why finished airing, suicide rates actually went up 30% among 10 to 17-year-olds in the US. So I think this is their way of trying to see if social media has an impact, because I haven't seen 13 Reasons Why.
I have, yeah. Well, I guess that kind of highlights social media harassment and how easy it is to be a victim of harassment. Yeah.
And I think with taking away the likes, as I said, I wonder if increased commenting will happen. And commenting is where the trolls come out to play, is in the comments. So imagine taking away that. Imagine disabling all comments. Like, I wonder how that would impact people and DMs.
Because it's not just being victim to social media harassment, it's seeing it and becoming desensitized to it.
Yes.
And is that sending a message that, oh, it's no big deal to leave a nasty comment someone's...
Yeah. And that is to be expected. Instead of... I remember when trolling first happened, it was like, oh my God, why would you say that to someone? Like, obviously these people are searching for reaction.
And I think it's because we spend more time on social media, so we are becoming more desensitized and it is more normal.
And I wonder if people who verbally say those things, if that's more normal now, like because they've seen trolling, they think, oh, okay, well, you know, people can say this online, especially younger people. They're a little bit more
easily. Where their virtual world's kind of blurred.
Yes. yeah. The lines are blurred and they're a little bit more easily influenced. So they might think, well, you know, I see adults trolling other adults online, so obviously it's the right thing
modeling
to do.
That behavior.
Young people and teenagers and, you know, adults, they're still learning what's right and wrong, and they model from their external environment. So if they see that, of course they're going to think, oh, this is the right thing to do, this is normal. And so in a world where social media is so huge and young people's engagement with social media is huge, that is a concern that I foresee happening, is that trolling is normalized and that behavior is normalized and okay. So yes, we'll be watching that study and seeing how that goes. That'll be really interesting to see. I really hope it's good things come out of it. Wouldn't that be amazing for young people and their self-esteem,
social media users yes. in general.
All right, well, that's it for today from the Psychology Sisters. So thank you so much for tuning into our first episode. We hoped you enjoyed it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We look forward to bringing you more hot tips.
All right, guys, thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode. If you want to see more, please follow us on our Instagram at The Psychology Sisters. Please note this is purely educational information. If this episode has raised any concerns and you feel you would like to speak to someone, please visit your local GP for further support. Tune in next episode for some more spicy science and sexy self-help.